Two hairy creatures have become primetime stars. Our critic at large, Laurie Stone, says hidden messages about sexuality and AIDS lurk in their shadows. She has these thoughts about the Fox television program Werewolf and the new CBS series Beauty and the Beast.
There hasn't been an avenging monster on the tube since the early 70s, when the Incredible Hulk sank forever into the primordial ooze. But right now, hairy-knuckled monsters are featured on two series, Werewolf and Beauty and the Beast. What's fresh is that the monsters, at once victims and gladiators, aren't imagined as aliens lurking in bogs. They've come in from the cold. They're us. Werewolf begins on an intriguing note. A young man is attacked out of the blue and turned into a werewolf. He describes his condition as an irreversible illness. He explains that an implacable urge whelms up, preceded by the sign of a bleeding pentagon on his palm. The mark conjures herpes, the doomed condition suggests AIDS, and the driving impulse signals sex, red in tooth and claw. As in David Cronenberg's remake of The Fly, the implied comparison of monstrous transformation with AIDS creates a bubbling cauldron of projections. Both The Fly and the werewolf begin innocent and unwitting, but once stricken, they turn into murderers, fiends without scruples or the power to control their blood hungers. I'm afraid I don't care anymore, each admits, venting our most sordid terrors about the HIV virus and those carrying it. Alas, werewolf's provocative ideas prove all growl and no fang. The series is a dreary, unscary mess, and the illness metaphor degenerates into a means of simply making the doomed man pitiable. But Beauty and the Beast shows more sustained imagination, and this program is one of the weirdest ever to surface. Catherine, a rich girl lawyer, is attacked and slashed, Marla Hanson style. She's rescued and nursed by Vincent, a man-beast of mysterious origins who lives in a tunnel community deep, deep within Manhattan's bowels. He reads Dickens aloud, then sends her home. But because he has empathic powers and can sense her danger, he comes to her rescue when brutes get the better of her again. The above-ground sequences have grit, and as Catherine, Linda Hamilton comes off as a believable 80s woman weaned on feminism. It's the fantasy stuff that sticks in the craw. Like Werewolf, this show is a cautionary tale. Werewolf says, "You thought you could screw around, but now you see it kills you." Beauty and the Beast tells women, "You thought you could live independently, but now you see you get cut." The creators of this show aggressively seek to please women. Ron Perlman, who plays Vincent, sums it up, quote, "The Beast is every woman's ideal fantasy figure. He's filled with love and gentleness and nobility, and he makes no sexual demands," unquote. That's not the case in either the original fairy tale or in Jean Cocteau's movie version, but here the beauty turns from real men to Vincent, a being utterly lacking in libido, a creature who is said to resemble a lion but in reality looks like a giant rabbit with David Lee Roth's hair. Excuse me, but is this really what women want? Book chats and rescues? Even if you're into protection, surely the equalizer who has sexual dynamism is preferable. Personally, I'm into a rough beast who meets me in the basement and dispatches the laundry. Men can make it with mermaids, but no nookie with supernaturals for girls. Catherine hugs the beast, but never do her lips touch fur. She doesn't know what she's missing, as I, a dog lover, can testify. In the age of AIDS, wouldn't Virgin Victor be a safe bedfellow? I say, let the girl have the beast and let the beast act like an animal. Do it for their health.
Laurie Stone is a New York-based writer and critic and is a contributor to The Village Voice.